Anyway,
we're telling you.
yeah, well,
Whoa, whoa.
I couldn't figure out what button it was. It wasn't pushed.
Somehow, I think Kat and I are in a space-time vortex.
Why?
Because we're having mass echoing.
Oh, there is?
Yes. Yeah, you're fine.
Oh my goodness, this is trippy.
This is definitely 1970s stuff. Okay, there goes my echo. It's gone.
Oh, it's gone now.
I hope James is still with us.
I am, but I'm afraid to speak. I have no idea what's going on. So I must be in the right place.
Yes. So anyway, want to welcome everybody to the Paranormal View right here on the Para-X Radio Network. And thank you for all being here. Those listening in a chat room and those listening from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. Let's see. If you are listening from somewhere else other than here in the chat room, feel free to come on over, para-x.com. Click on the live chat button. You'll be in with all these wonderful people, and you'll enjoy everything. You'll also be able to interact with us and also ask questions of our guests by private chatting questions to either, and I'll have my guests with us tonight, and our hosts. We have Kat Kloko.
Hello.
We have Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello.
We have Barbara Duncan.
Hello, hello.
All right. So everybody is here and everybody can hear. So that is very good.
And apparently the echo was not heard in the chat room. It was just in our headsets.
Are you guys still hearing it?
No.
We're fine. We just sounded absolutely nutty at the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I had a button here that was pushed that wasn't supposed to be or something like that. Anyway, so now it's working.
Great.
And we're glad of that. Got a great show lined up for tonight. And good. Everybody says there's no echo in the chat room. So is the sound good in the chat room? Am I talking loud enough tonight?
What? Oh.
Before, my sound seems to be a little bit low, but,
Nyla says in Ohio, apparently it's 89 degrees. It's about 90. It's been a little over 90 here in Hollywood today.
Yeah. Not where
it's been toasty.
Not where Barbara's at though. What's temperature, Barbara?
66 and foggy.
Oh man. Can I go there?
Yeah, seriously.
Hey. You can get a 9-hour train ride and be there.
Well, they were working on the western windows at my room all day. So I have this large like mirror thing that you put over like windows, and that's been down. So my room is an oven right now. It's probably way over 90 degrees in here.
Okay, Jeff.
Yellow.
Go ahead. Why don't you introduce our guest tonight?
Okay.
I was thinking something else, but go ahead and do it.
Now I'm curious of what you were thinking. Yeah. Our guest tonight is multiple book author James A. Willis, who from a young age had a taste for the unexplained and quickly began seeking out all things strange and spooky, and rightfully so. At the end of the last century, James moved to Ohio and founded the Ghosts of Ohio, ghostsofohio.org, a nationally recognized paranormal research organization in three divisions throughout Ohio: Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. Writing for the Weird U.S. series, James has written on Weird Ohio, Weird Indiana, Weird U.S. 1 and 2, Weird Hauntings, and Weird Encounters, as well as outside that series with his own Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories. A sought-after public speaker, James has given presentations throughout the country, during which he has educated and entertained tens of thousands of people of all ages, and he's been featured in more than 75 media sources, and now at around 76. So welcome, James A. Willis.
Hi, I am blown away by the fact you actually made it through all of that. That was, my gosh, that was incredibly long. I don't think you took a breath either. Are you okay? You're right.
I'm an actor. I'm sorry. I tend to cold read kind of fast. I should.
Very nice. Well, thank you all. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been far too long.
Well, I seen you at one of the events in Dayton, because I was only at one of them, and I'm not sure which one that was. Had to been, see, it was 2009?
I think so, because that's when we met.
Right. And then I also seen you once, if not twice, down at the event down south, down here. Where's that at?
Miami Town?
Miami Town?
Yeah.
Is that like Florida or something?
Not that far. Well, we're going to kind of like talk about all kinds of different things tonight from your books. I got a bunch that I'm interested in hearing some stories about. And I know Kat's got some, Barbara's got some, so Jeff's got some, I assume.
I have a new computer.
Yes.
Yes, Jeff's got a new computer.
That's very impressive. I'm most impressed. Nice.
No, well, the thing is I had a computer for like 13 plus years that was still running XP, and it had been repaired and had parts so often cannibalized that most likely there was nothing original left in it. And it finally gave up the ghost during the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the 11th, and it just wouldn't reboot. And I had Jeff Dean, one of our regulars in the chat room, was communicating with me on Facebook and trying to help and give advice. And Ron, one of the guys from the Everything feature, was helping as well. And I thank them both. But it's been replaced. And now if I could just get Windows Media Player to actually save video, I'll be fine.
Yes, the ballad of Jeff's computer.
Yeah. One of the things that one of the places that's kind of I've heard a lot about, and the way everybody made it sound like, was this town been completely abandoned. Roads were blocked off. You couldn't even go into the place. But apparently it's not like that. It's called Helltown, which is in Boston Mills.
Yes. Yeah,
is this the Silent Hill
I actually
kind of?
Gained, I'm sorry?
Was this sort of the Silent Hill one?
No.
No,
that's Centralia.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, I actually, way back when, kind of got the nickname The Man Who Debunked Helltown. Because you're exactly right. When I moved here in 99 and I made a short list of the places, you know, that I had to check out, you know, that were like at the top of the list of Ohio, you know, haunted urban legend sort of things. And Helltown was, you know, right near the top. And it's as you explained, they said that, you know, there were roads that were blocked off and had, you know, like government property, no trespassing signs on it. But that if you went down those roads, you would find these giant houses that were all boarded up for, you know, abandoned and in good working condition, but they were just sitting all by themselves. So of course I had to go up there, and the signs did exist. Probably my most quote unquote borrowed photograph. If you type in Helltown, you'll get a picture of that. I never get credit for, but gotta love the internet, of a road closed sign.
The yellow, you know, the road. The yellow. Yeah. Okay. So cool.
Yep. But the long story short, I spent probably about 6 months up there because there was all different legends in the area. It was everything from a busload of an old abandoned bus that at night the ghosts of kids who were murdered by a serial killer would peer in the seats. And so they pulled the seats out and the ghosts would still appear, to hearses that would run you off the road. You know, also, you name an urban legend, it was probably floating around Helltown. And the truth is actually a bit stranger than the fiction. Those houses did exist. As I said, the road closed signs were there. What I was able to find out is in the early 70s, the president passed a law that basically allowed the states to come in and basically claim eminent domain if it was under the guise of creating or extending a national park or a forestry thing. And that's what happened in the area. They came in and basically ran the people off, you know, showed up with a check and said, here's your money, get out. And that's where the government property no trespassing signs came from. The original plan was that the local fire departments were going to hold, you know, training sessions and burn the buildings down, but they never got around to doing it. The road closed. It's kind of the best part of the story. Again, it's our government at work here, but there was a portion of that road actually extends from Boston Mills through parts of Boston Township, and a portion of that road collapsed, and Boston Mills said to Boston Township, that's your part of the road, you fix it. And they were like, no, you fix it. So they both said, no, the heck with it. And they closed that section of road. So there's no monsters or anything that there. And whenever people ask me about it, I do tell them it's a beautiful place. It now is part of the state park. Go up there in the daytime, but under no circumstances go up there at night wandering around, because one, there's nothing there, and two, the local authorities and all of the locals are sick and tired of being said, hey, you live in Helltown, right? So they're not very friendly, you know, once the sun goes down.
So there's not really any kind of paranormal activity or ghosts then?
No, as I said, I've been, and I, you know, go back up there every, you know, maybe like once or year or so, just to kind of check in on things, because there's urban legends attached to it. And like I said, urban legends never die. They just mutate every couple of years. So every once in a while, somebody will, you know, write me something and say, hey, you told all these stories about Helltown, because on my website, there's a really lengthy article about Helltown. And they'll say, you missed this one. And it's a brand new story I'd never heard before. But I've yet to encounter anything up there. I mean, it's, as I said, the local cemeteries are supposedly haunted. I've spent time in there. You know, I've yet to come across anything except angry locals. And rightfully so, I guess.
Well, that's better than angry raccoons.
I would think so. I would think so.
Well, now, your book, The Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories, you have it kind of broke down into four categories, which is Northeast, Northwest, Southeast, Southwest, and like the Central, you might say.
Right.
Helltown is in the Northeast. But
yes.
There you go.
Yeah, there is plenty of others.
Henry is learning the geography of Ohio.
Oh, well, I'm just saying how his book's laid out.
I know.
Because that way people knows what area it would be in Ohio. There's another one. Everybody likes castles. And
like the bouncy ones? Oh,
okay. Not that kind.
No, not that kind.
But you've got like...
I like bouncy castles.
Well, you've got like three of them in your book, and one of them is called Strange Doings at Squire's Castle.
Yeah.
I've never been or seen Squire's Castle. What's it like?
Well, I mean, with all good ghost stories, there's the kernel of truth that's in there. And, of course, the harsh reality is what people call Squire's Castle was never going to be a castle. That being said, there's nothing really left to it, and it was built to be the sort of, we'll call it an outbuilding to a larger estate. So it does look castle-like, but it's completely gutted. It's basically the, you know, just the shell of the building. There was a story attached to it that basically said that the wife of the man who was building the castle, when they were living in the castle, heard a noise coming from the basement. In some versions of the story, they say it was a trophy room, or, you know, they add all these different aspects to it. But that when she went down there, she either saw a ghost. In some versions, she is just startled by something down there, something non-ghostly, and she falls and she breaks her neck. And now her ghost is supposed to haunt the remains of the castle. She didn't die there. And as I said earlier, they never really lived there, and it wasn't intended to be, you know, it was like an outbuilding. So that's where the story kind of falls apart. But I have interviewed numerous people. Again, it is part of State Park, so you can actually go there during the day, and it's kind of cool. You can picnic around it. It's kind of cool looking. It makes for really cool pictures. But I've talked to numerous people over the years that swear that they have seen, not necessarily the ghost of a woman, but they have seen a figure walking through there at night. But I can probably confirm that it's not the wife of the castle, because as I said, she didn't die there, but there are people that, you know, they swear up and down that something is going on in that castle. Castle-like structure, I guess you could say.
Yeah. But it's really popular. Like, when I moved back here to Ohio, that's one of the more, I'm going to say, notorious urban legend ghost stories we have here, as well as with Franklin Castle, which is what I hope we get to talk tonight a little bit about, and Mudhouse Mansion. So, which is a wonderful cautionary tale for avid, I'm going to call them legend trippers. People are just going out thrill-seeking for the paranormal. Yeah. So we can talk about them later in the show.
None of us have ever done that before, I'm sure.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, speaking of things that is close to us, there was a couple you had in the book, and I didn't know you had those in there. But one is... out for a jog on New London Road. Now, New London Road runs out of Hamilton. I've never heard this story before. So what's supposed to happen with that?
Yeah, that's another sort of just weird story. I mean, that came from the Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories. And for that book, what we were trying to do is that we were looking for stories that were not necessarily true, but ones that were really popular. So we were kind of trying to collect best of the best when it came to Ohio ghost stories. And the weird thing about that is I had never heard that story until maybe 2 or 3 years prior to that book coming out. But once they just came flooding in with emails that people were all reporting that there was the ghost of a male jogger. It was just like jogging on this road, and it was like, you know, the first time it came in, there had been around Ohio, I have a couple of stories in the archives of people, both male and female, hitchhiking, you know, the vanishing hitchhiker sort of thing, but this was sort of the first where it was an actual person that was jogging on the road. Mm-hmm. And again, I was like, the first one that came in, I was like, okay, that's kind of strange. But more and more people kept reporting it. I did find out later it actually appeared in another anthology of Ohio ghost stories. So I don't know if that's what all of a sudden had people starting to report it. It's that they heard about it and it was a new one to check out. But it probably went on that I was getting at least 2 or 3 emails a week from people that swore that they saw this. And the really weird thing is sometimes it was a man, sometimes it was a woman. I mean, so the stories were all over the place. The only thing that remained consistent is that there was a person jogging on the road. And just for fun, my wife has relatives that are down in the Oxford, Ohio area, outside of Cincinnati. And from time to time, if we were down there, we would just drive out and just randomly drive up and down that road and see if we could see even people jogging to say, like, okay, that's what started. It's a popular place for people to jog. And, you know, now they just kind of twisted that and all of a sudden they're ghost people, or that somebody mistook a real person for a ghost person. We never saw anybody jogging, though.
So, well, there's not much of an edge on the road.
Yeah, exactly right.
And so there's not really room for that.
Right, and that's where I was intrigued with the idea that, okay, well, maybe somebody did get, you know, because the story is that they got hit by a car and they
that's
died.
That's possible.
And so you're exactly right. That was what kept me thinking maybe there is some truth to this, because, as you said, it's not a good place to jog.
No.
So I highly doubt that anybody saw a real person and mistook them for a ghost. But I never was able to confirm that somebody did, you know, jogger or otherwise, that somebody did pass away on that entire stretch of road there.
Hmm.
Now, you had another one in there, which is just down the road from where I'm at, called The Hitchhiking Ghost of Princeton Road. Mm-hmm. Now, is that the one that's supposed to come from the cemetery?
Well, the Princeton one, I'm trying to remember. I don't think that one actually comes. I know that with most vanishing hitchhiker tales that they have.
Right.
The original ones all came out of, I believe it was in Chicago where they originated from, with the whole idea of the actual driving them to the cemetery and those sort of things. I don't think that the Princeton Road one, let me pause for a minute and see if I can, I don't think that that one actually came out of the cemetery. I could be wrong, though.
Well, what the history or one of the stories was there was a girl who had died and was in buried in the cemetery. Well, at times the road, Princeton Road, used to run right straight down into Hamilton, and right. They chopped it off and run it over into a 4-lane highway. It goes into Hamilton, but it used to be somebody would stop a girl walking down the road, would stop and give her a lift down to her house, which was on Dayton Street. And when they would take her down there, she'd ask them to go up and let her parents know that she was here. And they would do that, and they would say, no, she's dead, and she wasn't in the car anymore. So that's happened supposedly 4 or 5 different times, you know. But it's been a long time ago. Nobody's heard anything about it in quite a few years.
Yeah, because the version, and that's why I was intrigued when you said with the cemeteries, because I know that the version that I remember about Princeton Road was that it was a woman who was, I believe, I can read my own book, but if I remember that one, wasn't the story that she had been hit by a car, and that it's her ghost, and that if I'm remembering it correctly, that the story was that she kind of like, I don't know, warns people or what have you, that where her car was actually hit, where she was struck and died.
Mm.
And that if you stop, and I could be totally confusing the story, but I think that's the Princeton Road one, where that if you do stop, that she'll get in the car. But where I really got intrigued is because there were other stories that came in that I was never able to connect, is that there's what's the cemetery that's on Princeton Road?
Rose Hill
Cemetery has a ghost story about a girl walking among the tombstones, and I originally thought those two Princeton Road stories were going to eventually get connected and become the classic vanishing hitchhiker, that they pick her up on the side of the road and she asks, like you said, to bring her to the cemetery. But I was never able to connect the two, but it sounds like maybe they are.
Well, I haven't heard that one about roaming the cemetery. My grandma's buried in that cemetery, but that's, you know, there's all kinds of stories connected to different things like that, and they seem to be all over the place. So they're intriguing and interesting if you like just to go out looking for stories like that, seeing what you can find or see. Mm-hmm. We've done that before, so pretty interesting, though. And there's one other one in the area, and I believe this is out of Oxford area, and it's called The Signaling the Phantom Motorcyclist.
Yes!
Yeah, that is, you hit on one that is near and dear to my heart. It's, it's one that if any of your listeners or you guys actually like the story I'm about to tell you, then you need to come out this fall when I'm going to be roaming the state of Ohio giving presentations, because I actually have video of the headless motorcycle ghost from Oxford, Ohio.
You'll see a light coming up and over the hills, but then he never makes it to where you're at.
Yeah, when I first heard this story, it didn't make sense to me, because I always joke, and I'm not really sure why this is, but Ohio per capita has more headless motorcycle ghosts than any other state. I'm not sure where it came from, but there you go. I grew up in, upstate New York with the headless horsemen, so maybe they just upgraded and now they're riding motorcycles. But the very first headless motorcycle ghost is up in Elmore, Ohio. And I originally thought, when I heard the Oxford version, that somebody basically transferred, from northern Ohio down to college, down, Miami University in Oxford, and brought that story with them. Long story very short is the legend is that there was a girl who was dating a guy, and the parents didn't like the boyfriend because he drove a motorcycle. So they were like, you can't see him, stay away from the guy. And what she would do is she would wait for the parents to fall asleep, and she would go and flash the porch light 3 times, and then he would, you know, basically walk the bike down the street, she'd hop on, and then they'd ride away. And that one night, he either overslept or he was intoxicated, but she's flashing the light. When he finally sees it, he gets on the motorcycle and drives down, and he's going so fast that when he gets to where her house was at the time, there's a very sharp turn, and he couldn't make the turn, and he crashed through a barbed wire fence and, you know, came out the other side without a head. Uh-huh. And the story is that if you go to that spot on the road, you know, in front of where the girl's house used to be, and you flash your lights, that you will see a white, you know, you'll see his motorcycle headlight coming towards you down the road, and it'll disappear before it gets there. Now, having said all of that, you know, my bogus meter, I guess we should say, to keep it a family show, goes off as soon as, you know, they tell you. I mean, you guys know as well as I do, if they tell you, do this 3 times and a ghost will appear, you know, we wish that were true, because it would make our jobs a lot easier, and we could just, you know, have a sandwich, you know, flash the car lights, get a ghost and go home. You know, we wouldn't be sitting in the dark forever. But so as I said earlier, my in-laws live in Oxford, Ohio, and so I've been going down there for many years, and the very first time that we went down there, we were just driving up and down the road. My now wife, we were just dating at the time, and we didn't stop in the spot where you were supposed to because, you know, as I said, I wasn't planning on flashing the lights, and we didn't. But we did see the only way that I can explain it is a light from a headlight from a motorcycle. It was coming towards us. It was in the opposite lane of traffic. It was the right height. And, you know, I've lived throughout the South, so I know what a car with one headlight looks like. You know, it's always kicked off, you know, to the side. And this was dead center in the road, you know, just a couple of feet off the ground, and it was coming towards us. And we saw it at that point in time probably about maybe 15 or 20 seconds. And we dipped below a hill and came up the other side, and it was gone. And there was no place for it to turn off. But again, long story, even longer, is in the past 5 or 6 years, I have visited that road numerous times to try to figure out what I saw. Can't figure it out, but I have seen it numerous times. And one of the last times I went, we got it on video. And that light is visible for a good 30 seconds, maybe. And it is just the trippiest thing. I mean, I tell people, if you want a chance at seeing a ghost in Ohio, that's the place to check out. Do not pull off to the side of the road. Do not flash your light, because not only do the Miami University police, but also the Oxford police travel around there, and they don't like people going out to see ghosts. But if you drive up that road, just back and forth, say 10 times, you're going to see it at least once. And it always just disappears. And the neat thing in the video that I have is some people will tell you that it is the light from a barn, because there is one of those big giant spotlights on one of the barns on the road. You clearly see that in the video. You clearly see all of the other things that people try to dismiss it as being, this reflection off the markers on the side of the road. You see all of those, and we're driving on a straightaway, and this light just comes on. And it's already in the middle of the road. It doesn't come from far away. It's like somebody just turns a gigantic spotlight on. You can see in the video the crossroads where some people say that cars are actually going across, because if you continue down that road far enough, you'll hit a four-way intersection. There's no way for a car light to do what this thing does. I'm not saying it's a ghost. I'm just saying I have no idea what it was or is. We've gone down there in broad daylight. I love to go down there during the day when it's raining, because that's when people are going to have their headlights on, because we just drive up and down there hoping we're going to see a car, you know, and figure out it's some kind of weird physics thing that's going on with the light. But we can't figure it out.
Has anybody, are you using infrared cameras, or are you night vision cameras, or just regular
video cameras? We've gone across the board, and the video that I show is just the best one, but we've got it on everything across the board, from infrared night vision things to iPhone video cameras. So and on all of those, you never see anything more than the light, which is just the weirdest thing. And the light does actually reflect off the ground. So it's a tangible, real light. It's the weirdest thing. And the best way I can describe it is to say it is as bright as a motorcycle or a car headlight. And it's always in the exact center of the road.
Or Bigfoot with a flashlight.
Bigfoot with a flashlight.
Maybe, yeah. But the other weird thing is it doesn't bob up and down as much either. So it's like a stamp. You know, I was convinced for the longest time that I was going to bust a bunch of locals with a moped. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm actually being kind of serious. I thought, because when we would see the light, as soon as it would go out, we would try to catch up to where it was, because I was convinced they were driving up the road and then just dropping the bike, the moped, or what have you, and running. But we never found anything. It is the weirdest thing.
Wow.
I reckon I'm going to end up having to go up there then.
It is worth the trip. It is. I mean, it's, as I said, it started with, I did not think there was anything to the story, you know, and to that end, I have never been able to verify that there was a house in the bend in the road where they claim that there was a house. A few people that I've interviewed over the years have told me there was a house, but there's nothing on the maps that indicate there ever was a house there. I did find that a gentleman on a motorcycle did die on a road, but that was about four or five roads over, and he basically was he was going way too fast, and he basically hydroplaned and he died that way. So the story is not, the backstory is not true, which makes it even stranger, because it's almost as if people started seeing a weird light and built the backstory around it, where vice versa, a lot of people will actually just make up a story and you never see anything.
Right.
This is almost like they made a backstory up after they started seeing the light.
Wow.
Yeah.
Government would end up saying it's swamp gas.
I think they do. I'm not really sure. Have we ever found out if swamp gas actually exists?
Why do people keep bringing that up?
Well, I know there's a light that I've seen in Tomoka in Florida outside of Ormond Beach. And that's one of the things that they kept trying to say it was swamp gas.
Well, there are luminescent gases. I just don't know how prevalent they are in Ohio.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't think you'll find it here in Ohio.
You know, Ohio's got a lot of weird things. So I guess if it was going to be anywhere, it would be in Ohio. But I don't.
It would be near a Skyline Chili or a Gold Star.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right, Barbara, you got a quick question before we go to break?
Oh, let's go to break. I have a couple of questions, but I think there might be a little bit lengthy.
Oh, you think it might be?
Yeah, if I have to answer them, if you notice, I can't get short answers to anything, can I?
All right, I think we'll take a break, and we'll let Kat take us out, and Barbara bring us back.
Okay, so everyone, you are listening to The Paranormal View with your hosts, Henry Foyster, Jeffrey Gould, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Kat Kloko. Tonight, we have the strange and spooky author, James A. Willis. He is the author of The Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories, Weird Ohio, Weird Encounters, Haunted Indiana, plus many more. And he is also the founder of Ghosts of Ohio, the paranormal research team. Visit his website at strangeandspookyworld.com and ghostsofohio.org. More to come after the break.
This September 26th, come to see what awaits you in the long, dark halls of Pennsylvania's infamous Hillview Manor. The only way to keep yourself protected is to attend HillCon 2015, Hillview's Paranormal Community Convention.
That's right, kids. On September 26th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., grab the entire family and join us for the first ever Hillview Manor Paranormal Community Convention.
HillCon.
Come and talk to the spirits, celebrity guests, speakers, psychic mediums, and vendors from all paranormal realms who will be coming together to connect with you at this fantastic event.
HillCon.
Lectures, entertainment, and classes are also included in the mere $12 admission fee, $10 if you bring a non-perishable food item.
Then, as the day ends, the HillCon investigation begins. For only $65 a person, you can investigate the long, dark halls of Hillview Manor alongside many of the event's celebrity guests. For this portion of the event, you must register and pay in advance. Cutoff date for bookings is September 1st, 2015. For more information, furiously key in the URL www.hauntedhillviewmanor.com. Sign up today, because tomorrow might be too late.
Hillview Manor, 2801 Elwood Road, Newcastle, PA, 16117.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
You know, there's nothing like a great memory of a great time. And if you grew up during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, boy, have we got the memories for you. There was no time more innocent than the 1950s or 60s, nor was there a time more politically explosive. Hi, this is Steve Shockley, a.k.a. The Shock. Join me live every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for a Baby Boomer Rock with a Shock Sock Hop on rockwithashockradio.com.
So, you had a lucid dream about living in Atlantis, teaching telepathy, and you're wondering what it means. We can actually help. We are the School of Metaphysics, a 40-year-old international resource for people who have questions. Big, juicy, deep questions about life and death and everything in between. 16 branches in the U.S., self-guided study online, weekend courses, webinars, and books. Send us a telepathic fax or visit our website, www.som.org. This could be the start of something really interesting.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
Hello, everyone. I'm Henry Foister.
And I'm Kat Kloko. We're two of the hosts of the Paranormal View radio show on the Para-X Radio Network.
We at the Paranormal View are dedicated to bringing listeners new content every Saturday night from 8 to 10 p.m., but sometimes we need help doing it.
That's right, Henry. Whether you listen live or through our podcast, there are costs to bringing you the quality content you enjoy from us, such as equipment maintenance, Podomatic subscriptions, and keeping our website live. That's where you, the listener, come in.
We now are members of Patreon, a site where devoted listeners can become patrons to their favorite shows.
The small donations every month from listeners like you will go to replacing equipment like our microphones, headsets, or other equipment to improve our show.
You can read more about us and how to become a patron at patreon.com/theparanormalview. That's patreon.com/ The Paranormal View.
Thank you for your support.
And I guess that's game over. Welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio. We want to thank everybody for joining us tonight as we welcome back author James A. Willis, author of Weird Ohio, Haunted Indiana, the Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories, and Weird Encounters. Welcome back, James.
Thank you.
I'm listening to this, and it being a big fan of mythology, this sort of is how myths start and fairy tales start, which is you have the same common pretense going in different directions. A headless horseman becomes a headless bicycle or motorcycle person. Bunnyman Bridge becomes various incarnations of this. Do you find a common thread through the somewhat and being able to separate ghost stories from urban legends?
It's a great question. I think I've gotten better at it, but they, as I said, where I tend to struggle is that the stories don't ever remain constant long enough for me. I was obsessed with this for decades, and it used to be that, you know, back in like, say, even as, you know, later, early, it's like, say, the 80s, you could have when a story popped up, it would remain constant for a good 10 or 12 years before it even started to mutate. So it was a lot easier to try to track down where that original germ came from. But now with the internet, it's things happen so fast, it's very, very hard for me to keep track of them, you know, because it's kind of like they'll say, well, you know, there's a guy with a hook for an arm, and that actually, you know, obviously I'd be like, yeah, sure there is. But as soon as I'd be looking for the guy with a hook for an arm, and then they would say, oh yeah, and there's also a bunch of zombies, or there's something, you know, and it gets a lot harder. So I don't know if I've actually found a single common thread that goes through them, but I've gotten better at kind of picking up on things. It's also interesting to me because Ohio, one of the things that I think made it such a weird state is it's made up geographically of just so diverse areas that it, you know, you've got, you know, north and south, you've got, you know, large bodies of water going through it. And then on the east and the west, it's like landlocked. So you've got everything from plains to, you know, water stories. So you've got all of these sort of, you know, as you said, folk tales and legends, and all these things are kind of crashing together where, you know, when I was in, say, like Georgia, you weren't getting, until you got down to the coast, all of these stories about, you know, ghost ships and those sort of things, where Ohio, that you're getting those from, you know, Lake Erie and down with the river near Cincinnati. So it's really kind of hard to actually kind of track them all back to a common thread.
Is it culturally related too? Do you find that some cultures view ghosts in different manners? I mean, in like in Ireland and England, it's sort of like, oh yeah, we have ghosts. Those ghosts over there, yeah. You know, here it tends to have a bit more of a fearful connection to it. Every bump in the night is a demon sort of approach.
Yeah, I mean, that, unfortunately, I think we've got reality TV to, I guess, thank for that. But but with regard to, it's interesting you say, because when I, part of what I did is I worked on Weird Ohio and then Weird Indiana, but then I also, you know, traveled to other states for the Weird U.S. series that I did with the Weird U.S. guys. But I did notice something rather interesting just hopping over the state line from Ohio into Indiana. And my experience was that in Ohio, they were very open to talking about their ghost stories. I mean, to the point where when I was writing Weird Ohio and I would be covering like a ghost story, people would come up to me, and when they found out what I was doing, they would say, well, if you think that's a weird ghost story, let me tell you about this one. My experience with Indiana, and I don't know if it's because I wasn't you know, a Hoosier or what the case was, but I noticed that there was a very, there was a hesitation in almost sharing the stories, when it, particularly when it came to ghosts. And I don't know if that was cultural or, again, me, or if it was cultural and I was an outsider. In Ohio, when I would do book signings, people would come up to me, you know, and want to share their, in particular, ghost stories, or even you would get a lot of monster stories as well. In Indiana, we found that people would still, if they would come to the book signings, and this is just weird, and I tried not to take this personally, but I couldn't be at the table. They would want a book signed, but it was almost like they didn't want that interaction with me. And I, it could just be that, you know, I'm very frightening, but I did find it fascinating from a sort of cultural aspect, that just crossing over state lines, you've got two different, I guess you could say, approaches to ghosts. The other thing that I thought was interesting between the two states is that Ohio, when it came to their ghost stories, not kind of, they kind of had a hard separation between their ghost stories and then their sort of cryptid folktale-like creatures. Like Ohio has got, you know, we've got a version of the Loch Ness Monster, and we've got the Loveland Frog, which is a six-foot monster that's part frog and part man. But that, they're not ghosts. There were a lot of stories in Indiana that involved the ghosts of these cryptid things. There was like the Dog Head Bridge, which was, and I always get this story, I gotta make sure I tell the story correct, but basically a woman hits a German Shepherd on going over a bridge, and both are killed, and the both of them get decapitated, and through some weird thing that's never explained, that bridge is now haunted by a woman with a dog's head, and it's a ghost. So that was something that I thought was an interesting sort of twist on things, in that they had cryptid and these, you know, monsters, but they were the ghosts of them, as opposed to just being straight, you know, cryptid. So I thought that was rather interesting.
Yeah.
It seems to be... No, yeah, go ahead.
No, actually, James, when you're speaking about Indiana versus Ohioans with the book signings, I grew up in Indiana, and we have a few listeners in the chat room from Indiana, and we're all sitting here nodding our heads like, yeah, that sounds like Indiana. I don't know what the hesitation's for, but...
Wait, so it's not me. Okay, here I
no.
was, because I'd be like, I bathe people, you know, and I'd be like, oh, man, they really hate me here.
No, it's... I want to say Indiana's Hoosiers tend to be a little bit more introverted. I think that's it. It's not quite shy, it's just, it takes a little warming up. And even with my first book, which is about Indiana University, IU, mm-hmm. they still, people north or south of Indianapolis, it didn't matter, were still very hesitant to come up and talk to me. But once they do start talking, then the floodgates open and you hear all the stories.
Yeah. And I also found that, by and large, the stories that I was hearing in Indiana were far creepier.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, wow, it was almost, you wanted to like whoop them and be like, you can't be keeping a story like that inside. I mean, their stories were just crazy. But yeah, okay, I feel better now, because at first it was, you know, I was like, okay, it's just me. But then when I did Haunted Indiana, and you know, went back and did the same thing and focused just on the ghost, mm-hmm. because here I was thinking, in the beginning when we started the Weird U.S. series, it was in the early 2000s, and when people heard that you were working on a book called Weird Whatever,
mm-hmm.
and we were asking people to be in it, they equated weird with being insane. And so there was a hesitation with, like, which could be true, actually, I'll be honest, but we could see that hesitation in the beginning, because they didn't really understand. But once the book started coming out, people then saw that it was weird being eclectic or offbeat, or it's just a word that everybody always says, hey, man, that's weird.
Yeah.
So I thought that with a couple of years between Weird Indiana, going back and doing haunted Indiana and just focusing on the ghosts as opposed to the weird aspect, mm-hmm. that people would be more open, but no.
Yeah, and I guess it's just a cultural thing. And I will agree, Indiana has some very interesting ghost stories. And I grew up in northern Indiana, almost to Michigan, but you got Bell, I think it's Bell Guinness. I may be mispronouncing your name. The Black Widow of Indiana. You also have the man who decapitated himself with a homemade guillotine in Lafayette. That one baffles me to this day. I'm like, this man was brilliant, and why he chose to die this way, I don't know. So
apparently he wanted to prove that it worked. And my favorite part about that story is after he did it and they found his body, that he made sure that it was clearly visible on the device that it said patent pending.
You couldn't use a watermelon or a pumpkin or something. No, you had to go for the human tests.
Yep.
But and I think you're right with the nuance of the term weird used in Indiana versus Ohio, because we do have crazy people like that in Indiana. So weird would be a synonym for crazy or just kind of scary, I would say. So versus Ohio, which I don't know, I guess it would be more weird oddity type thing. You're correct on that. But I know, Barbara, you had a question.
Well, I was just bringing it back to like the mixture of the dog head and the woman. It just screams of, we have to come up with an explanation as to why something is going on that we don't understand. And it's elves are bowling is what thunder is. We make up stories to fit the location instead of trying to figure out what it really is. It's surprising me that it's so difficult to get back to the truth of what's really happening in a certain situation. We had it before with trying to figure out what's really haunting a person. Did a child die in a school? And is that a true story or not? And why it would be haunted to begin with? But with Indiana, it wasn't Close Encounters of the Third Kind based on a real UFO incident going from Indiana into Ohio?
Yes.
It's the I don't think the entire movie was, but the opening scene that Great Ohio UFO chase. I actually think it went from Ohio into Pennsylvania, but I could be wrong. But yeah, it did. It was in Ohio, and that was what Steven Spielberg has said, that when he saw an article about that, that's what kind of gave him the inspiration for writing.
Yeah, it's like the cops that encounter the UFO, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they did actually chase it down the highway.
Yeah.
Because I think they even left that in Close Encounters. I have to go back and rewatch it, but the part where it actually goes through the toll booth actually does have that. It's like the Ohio state line in there.
Now, do you find that people are more reticent to talk about ghosts or UFOs?
I think varies from state to state, but Ohioans are very open to talking about UFOs. I mean, there are UFO reports all over, obviously all over the world, but when it got to the point about doing UFO stories, by and large, Ohioans were very open to it. There's always been a lot of, which I've been personally fascinated with, is a lot of sightings of UFOs in Ohio tend to be over the water. We've got a lot of them that are out over Lake Erie, but there's been a lot of reports of them out there. And again, Indiana, there are reports there, but never really, again, not really open to talking about those.
Yeah. The only story I know from Indiana, it actually occurred to my husband, and that was near Grissom Air Force Base in Peru, Indiana. And I was with him for years before he just happened to say, oh, by the way, I saw a UFO with my sister back in 19... I don't remember the year. And I was just like, you just waited that long to tell me about it? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it... But in Ohio, we also have NASA and Wright Force... Or Wright Patterson Air Force.
And that's where, I mean, it's, if you look at any famous UFO case, for lack of a better term, from Roswell to Kecksburg, you know, the famous cases where it's kind of not even open for debate that something, be it, you know, it's something alien, if you want to say alien was from another planet or another country, but something alien did fall to the ground, mm-hmm. it inevitably does get traced back to Wright-Patterson, which in all honesty makes total sense, and it also makes total sense to me as to why Project Blue Book, you know, originated from Wright-Pat, because a section of it, I'm not really sure if it's still on base there, but back in the day when all of these UFO reports were coming in and when Project Blue Book was going, they had housed there a division that their job was to, not being a conspiracy guy, this is actual, that their job was to reverse engineer, quote unquote, mm-hmm. alien things. But basically that meant if an airplane fell out of the sky and the government went, we don't know whose it is, they shipped it to Wright-Pat to figure out what country sent it over, what it was capable of, and hey, can we make one? Mm-hmm. So it does make sense, like the Roswell debris, whatever that was, it's pretty much been documented that that eventually made its way back to Wright-Patterson, you know, the whole Hangar 18 mm-hmm. thing. And to me, that does, from a non-conspiracy, non-UFO buff, the rational side, I guess you can say, of me, totally gets why that would happen. But the weird side of me is like, man, I need to get in there and see where the aliens are, you know?
Yeah. Actually, one of our listeners in the chat room just mentioned lizard people. I don't know. Did you cover the Loveland Frogman?
Oh, indeed I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Loveland Frogman is another thing that's kind of near and dear to my heart, because it's something that kind of sets Ohio apart in its sort of land of the cryptids. But the Loveland Frogman, to me, what I find really fascinating about the case, other than the fact that it's, as I said, a 6 foot tall, half man, half frog creature, mm-hmm. Running around Loveland, Ohio, which is down, you know, kind of Cincinnati area. It's mm-hmm. Was that in the early 70s, there were two reports filed about people, two gentlemen, separate incidents, about a week apart, that said that they encountered this thing. But what I found most intriguing is that both reports were submitted by police officers.
Yeah.
So I find that to be rather interesting. And then I just love it because it's really freaky that the one officer actually shot at it. He said that he was driving along outside of Loveland, and the road he was on runs right across the Little Miami. So it's kind of, you know, a wooded area, and it's got like, it drops down into a ravine where the water is. Mm-hmm. And he came around the corner, and he said that he saw this dark thing laying in the middle of the road, and his initial thought was that somebody had hit a giant dog or a deer. Mm-hmm. And so he got out of the car to go and drag it off the road, and this 6 foot tall frogman stood up and he shot at it, and he doesn't believe he hit it. And he said that it grabbed the railing and it jumped over the railing, mm-hmm. and he heard like a rummaging through like the trees, and then he heard a big splash. There were or were not, it's open to debate, claw marks or scratch marks on the guardrail. But the bottom line is that he did have to file a report because he did discharge his gun. The one gentleman never changed his tale. The one who did, I think it was the one who discharged the gun, later said that he made it up. He then went back and said that he didn't make it up. He just was tired of being picked on. But both of them actually left the police force shortly after they reported it. And both of them said they just couldn't deal with the kind of harassment anymore.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's, and they just, there was some news from Loveland Castle just this week. They're having an erosion problem because of the Little Miami River constantly flooding, thanks to all the rain we've had.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, they're about to lose a fire pit along the river. They interviewed one of the Knights of the Golden Trail. And
Wow, that's horrible to hear, because some of the most, for me, kind of compelling, quote-unquote, evidence that I ever got at Loveland Castle was at that fire pit.
Wow, yeah.
That's really a shame, because the those of you not familiar with it, it's, I mean, everybody who can hear my voice needs to go to Loveland Castle, because it's just, it is an actual castle, unlike the Squire's Castle,
right,
that was built basically by one guy by hand, by basically getting up every morning with two empty 5-gallon pails, walking down to the river, yanking rocks out, and mm-hmm. building a castle. I mean,
yeah,
it is just fascinating. I mean, ghost stories aside, it's just really, it's an awesome thing to see.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can rent it for ghost hunts. Because
yeah,
I've done that.
Yeah. We've been there several years. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. my book that's coming out in the fall features the castle. And,
oh, great.
But prior to that, we thought it would be interesting to sort of set up our equipment along near that fire pit, because there is a path, which is what near the path that they said that Harry would take up and down,
mm-hmm.
you know, back and forth for over 50,000 times. They said he went,
yeah,
back and forth gathering rocks. So I thought to myself, you know, if there's any sort of residual energy, this would be the place to go. I mean, you've got 50,000 times of a guy walking back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's completely on the opposite side of the road from the castle. There's nothing around there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had all of our EMFs, the K2 meters and things like that started just fluctuating wildly.
Mm-hmm.
For no apparent reason. And the interesting thing is, when we had people, whenever I get something odd like that, I always like send the equipment out or call up a tech person and never say, would a ghost do this? You know, I always say, I think the mm-hmm. equipment's busted. You know,
right.
I leave it very open-ended. And especially when it comes to something where I get the K2 to work, because, you know, everything can set that thing off. But all of the people that we talked to just said, the equipment is working fine. It's not malfunctioning or broken. And if it was, it wouldn't do what you're saying that it did there. I mean, we had like, you know, EMF readings that would go from like 0.2 up to like a 25 and hover there and then go back down. I mean, it was, and there's nothing out there. It's woods. It's a fire pit, you know, out in the, you know, in a little clearing.
Just
so,
right next to the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are also stories that I had never heard back in the 90s when I moved here, but there are now stories of a woman in white who floats
mm-hmm.
above the water down there. And some of the people I interviewed said that they think that she actually was a woman that lived up river, and that
mm-hmm.
she would actually come down there. They said that Harry had a garden and I don't know how to say this without giggling, but that he liked her tomatoes. So, so they were exchanged. I don't think that's a euphemism. I think they were talking produce. We'll go with that. It's an urban legend. Anyway, but yeah, they say that she literally floats above the water outside, and that fire pit is right near there.
Yeah.
I mean, the fire pit is kind of like a halfway point between, you know, the castle and the water's edge. Well,
mm-hmm.
it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd hate it if they lose that.
Well, when my paranormal team was there in 2011, we were sitting in, it's not right next to the river. It's that little bench area that they have outside the castle that's also hand-built.
Yes,
and it,
yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. And we were just taking a break, and it was something like 10 at night. We had been in there investigating for a few hours, and all of us were accounted for in, including Sir Kevin, who was the Knight of the Golden Trail, who was there to basically babysit us, I guess.
Right.
So we're just speaking to him and seeing what he's talking about. He was talking about the woman in white and the little whirlpool that's just down the river from the Little Miami, or from where the Loveland Castle is. And in the chapel, which is on the second floor of the building for our listeners, and it's a Norman-style castle, so it's very condensed. And there's only, I think, one stairwell. And it's very difficult to get up and down. There was a shadow walking, and we could see it through the stained glass windows, which are these tiny little narrow but very long stained glass windows. And it was walking up and down the chapel area. And myself and another team member went up to the chapel and tried to recreate it. And it turned out whatever it was had to be close to 7.5 feet tall. Because I'm 5'2", failed to recreate it. The guy that went with me was closer to 5'10", 5'11". He was nowhere near it. It was above, it stretched from basically the ceiling to the floor. And the spooky thing was, and we had a remote control with, or a walkie-talkie with us, we're in there and we're like, hey, is this making it? Is this making the shadow? And they're like, it's still in there with you. We can see it walking around. And it was really spooky. And we're like, wow, that's really interesting because there's nothing in here that is capable of making this shadow. There's not a moth next to the lamps. There's nothing. And all the lights were on. And our tri-field meter throughout the night kept going off. And I've used tri-field meters before with actual academic work out in the field, and you can't touch them. You can't be anywhere near those things because the static, for all of you ghost hunters or aspiring ghost hunters, if you use a tri-field meter, you cannot hold the thing. You have to put it on the ground and walk away about 6 feet because it will, if you make even any static, it will pick it up and it will buzz. So you can't be like some of these paranormal shows where they're holding the tri-field meter in their hand and saying, hey, look, it's working. And it's like, no, that's probably just you. But yeah, it kept going off and we couldn't figure out why. So we just noted whenever it went off and to see if there was a pattern. And we also had a video camera pointed at it. And before everyone goes, oh, well, the video camera is what was setting it off. It was on a tripod that was about 4 feet away, zoomed in so it could see the face. But then you balance or zero out the tri-field meter to accommodate the fact that there's an electrical gadget around. So any of the readings we would have gotten from it would not have included the electrical feed coming off the video camera. So that's how that works. And that's what we did. And yeah, and we even got an EVP from Sir, I think, Harry. From his bedroom. Oh. And it was interesting. I need to find where it is. But yeah, Loveland Castle, great place. You should go visit it. And all the proceeds go towards Knight of the Golden Trail and upkeep of the castle.
Yep. Before we take a break, I got one more quick one. It probably won't take real long for you to talk about it.
But yes, it will.
it's in Columbus. And what is Beware of the Woolly Booger?
Ew.
That is actually a cemetery, and they refer to it as, it's either the Woolly Booger, some people call it the Woolly Burger, and depending who you ask, it's just the name of the cemetery, or some people will say that there is an actual creature known as the Woolly Booger or the Woolly Burger that's running around in that cemetery. Long story short, there's nothing there. it's just a really spooky cemetery. All of the things that I was able to kind of, I guess, find out when people said that there were lights in the woods, they were actual fishermen that were down there. They used the little headlamps, kind of like the ghost hunters use. So it's just I have no idea where the actual term Woolly Booger or Woolly Burger came from, although I was able to find out, as I said, it's a very popular fishing hole, that there is a Woolly Booger fishing lure that some people have said they've used down there. So I don't know if people started just calling Woolly Booger Cemetery because that's where you would use a Woolly Booger lure.
So there wasn't really any connection with any kind of paranormal?
No, I mean, I've been out there numerous times. It's a neat cemetery, but I think a lot of the stories all came from the... Most of the stories will tell you that there's, like, flashing lights, and even the ones that say that there's a monster out there will connect the lights with the impending arrival of the monster. But, yeah, there was nothing there. There's even a newer version that's popped out that back further behind the cemetery is really where the monster lives, and there was a house back there at one point, but it's a standard mutating urban legend. I haven't found anything back there. It's a cool story, though.
Well, I think we're going to take our last break right now, and Jeffrey will take us out. CC will bring us back about 5-6 minutes, so stay tuned, Jeff.
Yes, you're listening to The Paranormal View with para-x.com with hosts Henry Foister, Cat Cloco, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with paranormal investigator and author James A. Willis. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Mel Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Hi, I'm Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream in Gettysburg. You're listening to The Paranormal View on Para X Radio Network.
Good news, everyone!
We're back, baby!
That's right, we're back! Hi, I'm Pat McCormick, and Ghost Soldiers Radio is back! We're teaming up with The Shock on Rock with The Shock Radio, and we are on a mission.
We're on a mission from God.
A mission to play great music and have fun.
God be praised!
Ghost Soldiers Radio starts May 16th at 10 p.m. on rockwiththeshock.com.
Hey, kid, do you like music?
Sure.
Good.
So if you like music, join us as we move on up. Saturday, May 16th at 10 p.m.
Yeah, we're moving on up.
So join us May 16th at 10 p.m. for Ghost Soldiers Radio, only on rockwiththeshock.com.
We finally got a piece of the pie.
I found it at last! Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy-mettled maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear.
Line.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Kat Kloko, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Para-X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Soho.
Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio. We want to thank you all for joining us this evening, especially all our listeners from around the world. And tonight we have listeners in the United States, Canada, Great Britain, and Australia. Welcome, everybody, and especially to those in the chat room right now. As we talk with our very special and returning guest, James A. Willis, author of Weird Ohio, Haunted Indiana, The Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories, and others. Welcome back, James.
Thank you.
I, for one, love a good multiple homicide and ghost story. And
really?
You have one in your book called Murder at Old Potter House, which is interesting because you
can't...
We know
Voldemort did it.
Yeah, Voldemort. But it's interesting now because you really can't collaborate anything at the house as it's gone, but it's a great story.
Did you mean corroborate?
Collaborate.
With an R.
Collaborate, yeah.
Corroborate.
Oh man, this is the thesaurus.
Yeah, I'm just gonna let you guys continue. It's kind of fun. Yeah.
This is the thesaurus. Thesaurus. Yeah.
Don't
tomato ever, tomato.
Yeah.
Don't ever say anything about me talking.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the Potter House is one of those things that you're exactly right. It kind of, that to me seems that it was a, you know, if you've got that chicken and egg thing, this is sort of the idea that you had an old abandoned house that, you know, I always joke and say it looked as though it should be haunted. And that the story just came up around that. You know, they started actually, we get a lot of those in Ohio, but I'm sure it's across the United States where it's a haunted house that they just look spooky and there's a totally unverifiable story that goes along with it, you know, and it does usually involve mass murder that takes place there. Mm-hmm. And actually I think the Potter House is burnt down since.
Yeah, it always reminds me of a little girl standing there thinking it's Boo Bradley's house. You know, it has that old, you know, and children will develop stories. Oh, it must be haunted.
Sure.
There must be a wicked old man in there or a wicked old woman in there. It just makes for good storytelling.
Oh, exactly. Sure.
But yeah, I guess according to your book, the fire department actually burned the house down?
Yeah.
As part of
as part of one of their kind of control fires or a training exercise.
Mm-hmm. That's too bad.
Well, that brings us over to Mudhouse Mansion, which we mentioned earlier in the show. And I have the Weird Ohio turned to that particular article at the moment, but one of the Bloody Mary origin stories is said to take place at Mudhouse Mansion. Would you like to tell our listeners the story of Mudhouse Mansion?
Yes, but first I have to say, don't go to Mudhouse Mansion.
Yeah,
stay
don't
away
go
from
there.
Mudhouse Mansion. Yeah, it's in all seriousness, it's one of the places that is not only heavily patrolled, but it's patrolled by family members, and it's because, unfortunately, the people who claim that they are ghost hunters, but I have another word for them that I won't say, but there were several attempts to burn the Mudhouse Mansion down.
So it's brick, though.
An abandoned building, and so don't. People, even if you were going there just to take pictures, you're not going to be there alone very long. So yeah
you
not,
will get shot at.
Yeah, it's not a good place to go. But the story is a fascinating one because there was a Mudhouse Mansion. It's not the building that people go to. That burned down years and years ago. But this building is referred to Mudhouse Mansion because it is literally a mansion that sits on Mudhouse Road near Lancaster, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And it is a fascinating story. I mean, it basically is one of those stereotypical, it looks like it should be haunted. It's now a shell of its former self. But when I first saw it, which would have been back in 2000 maybe, it had this gorgeous, freaky, gothic, like wrought iron things all along the rooftops. It was just a very imposing structure. There were several brick outbuildings around it. And there were several stories, that none of which were ever verified, involving a husband and a wife, adultery, the husband kills the wife. There are stories about that they were slave owners and the slaves had like an uprising, various stories. And again, they get wilder as the years went along. I can actually say, though, that I think there was something out there at some point. I think there was some ghostly activity that was going on in that area. But personally, I think it was a very sad, ticked-off ghost at what was becoming of the property, if that makes any sense. I mean, it was a different time back then. You could actually at least go out there and go through, the area. Not anymore, though. It's they've even installed security lights up on giant poles all around it because, as I said, it's the windows have been all broken out. It's been set up on fire a couple of times. But it is it's one of those that, sadly, I think it's beyond repair at this point.
Yeah.
It's one of these things that when I first, set eyes upon it, it probably could have been salvaged. It from the research that I've done, the family that owned it then, I don't know if it's actually still there, but there was another house right all the way up on the road. So to get to Mudhouse Mansion, you kind of had to turn into a driveway, go past the smaller, more modern house, and then that was kind of like sitting almost in the backyard, per se. So my understanding is when the mansion itself started to fall into disrepair, that they kind of, the family all relocated to that smaller house. That has since been abandoned, and that's going, I haven't been down there in a couple of years, so I don't know if that house is still there, but back in, 2000, that was also abandoned. They do have relatives that still live on the road, and as I said, they're not, again, rightfully so, it's not a place that they let people go out onto. But if you do go down there, if you find yourself driving around that area and all of a sudden see a sign for Mudhouse Road, especially if it's like right at dusk or it's getting a little foggy out, definitely it is definitely worth driving by because the way that it's situated on the hill, when you go by, if you hit it just right, it looks as though it's rising up
Oh wow!
And it's just gorgeous to actually see in a spooky, twisted kind of way.
Yeah.
But that is also what I think gave rise to the one particular version of the story that says that you can't see the house, and on certain nights it appears in the mist. I think it's because the way that it's situated. If you were to go there, probably not now because they have the floodlights, but back in the day, if you were to go there like in the middle of the night and it was foggy and look out across that field, if the fog was high enough, you wouldn't see the house.
Wow. Yeah, the house must have been beautiful at the time when it was built. And anymore, Jeff, I think you mentioned it's brick. It may be brick on the exterior, but it's a wood beam frame. Yes. So all those fires would have rendered it pretty you can't go in there. It's so unsafe.
Right.
And that's why I think the family wants to keep a repeat of what happened in the North Carolina bridge, where you have curious paranormal seekers looking for a thrill, and oops, they got hit by a train.
Yeah.
So somebody can get really hurt visiting, but it is a fascinating story because it's one of the Bloody Mary origin legends. The other one is Mount Olive Cemetery, actually, which is close to Mansfield Reformatory. Yeah.
Yay!
Yay! Everyone loves Mansfield.
I've got another one, and everybody likes to go out looking for things, you might say. So,
with permission, of course.
Might we?
Where did Tinker hide his gold?
Tinkerbell, what?
Follow, of course.
That's supposed to be in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah,
you really love Northeast Ohio, Henry. Sorry, James.
I just wrote the stuff down.
He just saw the gold. He wants to know where the gold is.
Well, I'm looking for the gold. Anybody find it yet?
No, nobody's ever found anything down in there. Except the point. I mean, it kind of goes back to those stories. When I try to like mess with people, I say, I went to this haunted bridge that I was supposed to flash your lights three times. And I did it. And I looked in my rearview mirror. And guess what I saw? A bunch of other people behind me flashing their lights three times. You know, if you go down to Tinker's Hollow and you're looking for gold, you know what you're going to find? A bunch of other people that claim they're looking for the gold.
Now, where's it located at? And is it just a area or a house or?
Well, the original, the one with it where is Tinker's Hollow is actually, it's I don't know what you would call it. It's geographically, I guess technically it's a holler, if that makes sense. You know, so
right.
It's kind of, you know, so that's it. So it's just like an area. There's a Conowood Creek actually crosses over the top of it, and there's a bridge there. And looking down into that is the general area where supposedly that Tinker with his gold, old man Tinker, you know, it's like Scooby Doo or something like that.
So
it's got to be true if old man Tinker is down there, but. He supposedly had a cart, you know, had gold that he was hiding down around there, and that he was ambushed and he was killed. In some versions, he's thrown into the water. In other versions, he's drowned in the water. And then another one, he just dies on the bridge. So the stories are all over there. I've never found it. Old man Tinker.
Did you go looking?
He actually existed. What's that?
Did you go looking?
I did. Of course I did. I'm the weird guy. I have to. And there's gold involved. Why wouldn't I be there? what I should do is tell people that it is. I mean, the area, you can go to the bridge, and the bridge, obviously, you know, is open to the public. You can cross over the bridge, but the area on either side of the bridge and the areas in the water down below, there are private property, and they are heavily posted. And once again, it's not an area that I would recommend you go down there saying you're looking for gold. Yeah.
Darn.
And I mean, unfortunately, you know, a lot of the stories that I tell, especially all the really good ones, have to come with that caveat because it's a sad state of what has become of, quote-unquote, ghost hunting. You know, it's become now that, you know, we've got a couple of people that, for whatever reason, are like, wow, this is a cool cemetery. Let's knock over the headstones. And it's now become a black eye that gets a blanket thrown over everybody.
Right.
And, you know, the few people ruin it for everybody now. And it seems like all of these places, you know, don't want anything to do with ghosts. Even if you're going out there in broad daylight just taking pictures, it's like, no, I don't want anybody down here, because you might be okay, but somebody's going to find out and they're going to send, you know, it's kind of a sad state of affairs. It's a harsh reality, I guess.
There's this one place I guess you have to be real careful about, because you could lose your head. It's losing your head on Watkins Road Bridge.
Well, I don't think you've got to be that careful, because the person.
Apparently, it's really easy. Apparently, I guess.
Yeah, but I think it was a one. It's basically, from what I could tell, it was at the most a one-time deal, and it does, you know. So it's kind of like, well, I guess I should say. I mean, the story that's around that is basically the stereotypical that you've got this. Basically, it's somebody that lost their bridge. I mean, they used to call it Headless Hattie's Bridge. I've heard it referred to. But basically, the story behind that is that this woman was involved in some version. She's, you know, in an accident. In other words, there's a really bizarre one involving a murder that she actually loses her head. But regardless, a woman lost her head on the bridge, and that if you go down there, she's going to come, you know, stumbling out of the woods. You know, in some version, she wants your head. That's where it comes that you might lose your head. But, you know, it's a strange little thing.
Well, most all these stories are kind of myths, and the hauntings are probably sparsely, loosely connected to it, if there's any actually paranormal activity with them.
Right.
There's another one here that's close to me and Kat anyway. Fun and Fright at Kings Island Theme Park.
Ah, Kings Island.
I mean, everybody's heard some of the stories from there.
Well, it was also on Ghost Hunters, so who hasn't?
Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Is there anything there, or is it just more myths?
Well, here's the interesting thing. I mean, I have long been obsessed with Kings Island, if for no other reason that you've got the whole idea of a haunted amusement park. I mean, that to me, again, goes back to, you know, my upbringing on Scooby-Doo. I mean, you know, there's got to be ghosts there. You know, they're going to go to the haunted amusement park. So, but I have never been allowed to, quote-unquote, investigate Kings Island. Came dangerously close to being able to, and then, you know, taps came in and the doors all shut. So, but the things that I found that are interesting, because there's, you know, you've got the whole idea of actual facts, at least to back up the part that something really did happen there that could possibly result in a haunting, you know. So that's why I've been drawn to Kings Island. And the one is the Tower Johnny, which is the boy who fell from the Eiffel Tower, you know, the replica Eiffel
right.
Tower thing that you go up in there. I mean, a guy unfortunately did fall from that tower.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part is, it's sad to say my favorite part about someone dying, but it was on Friday the 13th. And why that's one of my favorite parts of the story is that when I first heard it, you know, they said it's haunted by Tower Johnny. He climbed up the outside of the tower on Friday the 13th, and they told me he was struck by lightning, and he fell off. And I was like, sure, I believe all of that. I really do. You know, the only part that wasn't true is he didn't climb up the entire outside of it, and he wasn't struck by lightning. But he did. It was on a Friday the 13th, and he did fall and die from, you know, when he fell from the tower. So to me, that's intriguing, because now you can look at that and say, okay, if the place is really haunted, I could see why it would be. So I like that aspect of it. The other part, which I admit, I had been to Kings Island maybe twice before, and then someone said, well, there's a ghost of a little girl, and she comes out of the cemetery on the property. And I'm like, there's a cemetery there? And yeah, there is. You know, so I felt foolish, because there really is a cemetery in the parking lot, and it's a real cemetery. And once you see it, you begin to think, how the hell did I ever miss that? But yeah, there really is one there. And if you look at some of the, choose my words wisely, but if you look at the old plots and where the lines were drawn and things like that, there is a possibility that maybe some of those great, now let's just say that there is a possibility that that cemetery was a lot bigger before the parking lot went in. And to me, if it really is a case of graves being paved over, I know for one that would make me come back as a ghost and be a little angry. My whole, what part of final resting place don't you guys get, you know? So so that to me is intriguing, you know, the idea, because again, if that is true, I could see how that could result in a haunting. So it's I can't really comment on the validity of the stories because I've never actually been in there and spent any time in there, but there's enough, you know, most amusement parks, they will tell you, are haunted, you know, but this to me at least has some historical background in it.
Yeah, that cemetery is called Dog Street Cemetery.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was just a family, and it turned into a neighborhood cemetery for King's Mills, which is what King's Island is named for, because right behind King's Island is King's Mills, which is a munitions plant. And interesting, I don't know if you know this, but the King family home is still on King's Island.
No, I did not know that. Where is that
at? Yeah, it is hidden, but you can find it if you take the train ride that it's behind the Dippin' Dots in the children's section.
Of course it is. Of course.
Of course. So there's a, it used to be a Cowboys and Indians train ride, but now it's just a train ride through the King's Mills forest area. And you just ride this train and you're like, wow, this is really nice. And then you see this, what looks like a prop building in the middle of a field. And it's about 1.5 stories tall. And it is a, just a wood board, clutterboard. It looks like a shed, actually. It has two windows and a door, from what I remember. And I remember riding the train and looking at that and like, that's not a prop. It isn't. It's the original King's family's cabin. They used it as a prop during their cowboy and Indian recreations, but it's the family's house. And it was eventually abandoned and the family built a different house, but it's still there. And King's Island maintains it. And I don't know. Did we get to Black Friday at King's Island? Or Black Sunday? Oh, June 9th, 1991, three people died on King's Island grounds that day.
Really? I was going to say, if I figured if there were so many ghosts there, a Black Friday would be a heck of a white sale.
Yeah, it's Black Sunday. I'm trying to remember if one patron and two maintenance staff, technically one security guard and a maintenance staff, passed away. The patron was drunk and fell out of a ride to her death in front of a crowd. And the maintenance people were fixing, actually it's next to the Viking boat ride. There's that pond and it's right next to the beer garden. And I think it's a Viking boat ride. It's one of those rides that you swing and that pirate type. There was a electrical socket, an underwater light that was malfunctioning. So one of the maintenance staff waited in to go fix it, but they didn't realize it had shorted out and the entire pond was now electrified. So he walks in and immediately is just electrocuted. And the second guy goes in, tries to help him. He's also stunned. And then a security guard went in to try to fish them out, and it didn't go too well with him. Eventually, they were able to get them out, and two of those three men passed away.
Maybe we should wait till the power's off.
Yeah. You also had two people mauled by lions in the safari park in the 1970s, and the Metro monorail line they used to use is now up on display at Trader but not Trader Joe's, Jungle Gyms in Fairfield. That's where that's from.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've King's Island history really fascinated me. So, yeah. That's now you can write even more for a book.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, our 2 hours is still running right on by. We got about, 15, 16 more minutes before we have to start wrapping up here. There's, and I had it in here. Oh, The Legend of Gore Orphanage.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Isn't that like a movie with that name?
I think somebody tried to make a movie about it. Yeah.
I think my friend Maria may have been in something that sounded like that.
Where is that located at?
It is up in like northern Ohio. It's outside of in Vermilion, Ohio. It's a that's easily probably in the top three in terms of ghost lore in Ohio. It's the story that's told. I mean, it's very hard to keep the different variations, but the basic story is that there was an orphanage, and that it the orphanage burns down, and there's different versions of it. In one version, it's the old man Gore, you know, who owned it and didn't like kids, and so he burns it down and burns the children alive in it. In another version, he's, I guess he's still old man Gore, but he's nice, and it's a accidental fire, but again, all the children die when they're burned inside. But the story is that if you go to the remains of the Gore Orphanage, conveniently located on Gore Orphanage Road, that if you go out there, the big story is that you get out of the car and you walk around. If you're lucky, you will hear ghostly kids screaming. You'll hear the sounds of fire. You might be able to see ghostly kids on fire running through the woods. But then when you get back to your car, you will find little children's handprints all over your car.
Well, there have been handprint stories where people, you know, have their cars on train tracks, and they
you're exactly right. The only variation here is there's no, in most of the train track ones, the car is physically pushed, you know, out of the way, and they've got the story around it that the children died in a train wreck. There's no, I'm never able to determine where the handprint, how it ended up here, other than the fact that the kids, you know, were supposedly doing it, but nothing happened on the road where you park your car, I guess is what I'm saying. So they don't push the car, you know, if you're in the car, it's not like it moves or anything. So it's a slight tweak on that, but you're exactly right. As I said, there really is a Gore Orphanage Road. There really was an orphanage on that road, and that's pretty much where history then starts to take a hard right, because the orphanage was not called Gore Orphanage. It was called the Orphanage of Light and Hope. It wasn't an orphanage in terms of what we would think of an orphanage, you know, a big spooky building. It was actually just several small houses. By all accounts, it was, when it closed, it was abandoned, and then several years after that, it did catch fire. But there were no fatalities, and there was no one inside it. Now, why I'm fascinated with the location is the place where people, they're starting to catch on, but back in the day, the place where people would tell you to go and point to what were the foundations of the Gore Orphanage, were not the foundation remains of the Gore Orphanage. It was actually the Swift Mansion that they were in. What would have been the orphanage is completely down the other side of the road, all the way at the other end, near the Crybaby Bridge. So there you go. But the interesting thing about the Swift Mansion, because one would say, okay, so now they're not only They've got the entire history wrong. No kids died, so there's no reason for kids, burning or otherwise, to be running around in these woods, and we're not even in the right location. We're probably at least a half a mile, if not more, away. The story's complete BS. Except, and here's what's intriguing about it to me, the Swift mansion, there were the Swift family actually, and built it. And then after that, he sold it to a man named Wilbur. The Wilbur family lived there, and they had four children, all very young, die of cholera within several months of each other, all in that house. It's also been, I don't know if it's actually been documented, but it's reported all over the place, and it makes sense because during that time period, all the affluent people were holding seances in their homes. You know, that was the thing to do. It's like a parlor game kind of thing. There are allegations that the Wilbur family, and I can totally understand this, they've lost four kids, were holding seances in that house to try to contact the dead children. I'm really intrigued with that because I'm like, so have we now had a mutation of the legend and an intermingling with the fact? And the fact is that what people are saying are the orphanage children are actually the Wilbur children that are out there.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's something. And the Wilbur, I mean, I know that I don't know them off the top of my head, but the, mm-hmm. you know, the ages of the children, it's all documented. They really did die. You know, they're in Maple Grove Cemetery, which is maybe 2 miles from Gore Orphanage Road. So mm-hmm. you can actually go up there. You can validate when they died. You can check. We normally do our stuff through Ancestry.com, but you can check right. and find out that they really, four children really did pass away. The only part that I can't get concrete proof on is the mm-hmm. actual seances that were done in the house. But it fits not only the time period, but also mm-hmm. the fact that they were very affluent and everybody seemed to be doing it there. So that's
yeah.
kind of intriguing to me.
Yeah, and that's a part of the story I hadn't heard before.
Which part?
The
Wilbur children?
Yeah, the Wilbur children.
Yeah,
so.
And to me, that's the part that the really weird thing to bring this whole urban legend mingling full circle is that mm-hmm. Maple Grove Cemetery, where they are buried, mm-hmm. For the longest time used to be home to the Dark Angel legend. It was a giant statue of an angel that mm-hmm. supposedly came alive at night and flew mm-hmm. around the country. And then what happened is they said that its mouth would be stained with blood, and it was because it was killing livestock and other children. And, well, somebody actually knocked the head off of it, and then somebody knocked hands off of it, and then the cemetery got mad, and the whole thing is gone now. The reason I bring that up is mm-hmm. maybe 2 years after that, they said there was another statue, and it was the Vampire Man. And that if you looked at this statue, people in their right mind say that's called rust. But if you look at the statue's mouth, there's
yeah.
what appears to be blood coming out of his mouth. The whole point of this story is that that statue marks the Wilbur children's grave. It's the Wilbur family plot.
Wow.
So people are going up there and talking about the Vampire Man and saying, well, that story is not true. And I'm like, might not be true, but you're at a site that grave plot right there. It's got a lot of history that mm-hmm. if you just go down the road, you might be able to tie to a real story.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, can we touch on my favorite haunted location in the entire state? And
sure.
It's not Mansfield Reformatory, Jeff. It's Franklin Castle in Cleveland, which is also
yes.
on the cover of the Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories.
Oh, I saw what you did there. I like that. I like
oh,
that.
Oh, yes.
I did that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Franklin Castle is like the haunted location in Ohio. It's castle-like. It's
mm-hmm.
Got the name Franklin Castle because it's on Franklin Boulevard in Cleveland. And if you've heard any kind of ghost story or urban legend, it has been attached to this house at one point in time. I mean, it's everything from secret passageways inside of the building, ghosts,
mm-hmm.
Deformed children, people finding human remains hidden in the
mm-hmm.
walls, gangsters who had secret tunnels that went out to the lake for bootlegging. Mm-hmm. There's even Nazi sympathizers gunning down people in the basement. I mean, there's just all kinds of stories. The fascinating thing is that these stories go back through, they really started kicking in the 70s, but the actual history of it goes way back, to the turn of the century, where they've got the people that these stories are based on. So you've got, it's probably one of the longest standing haunted houses. It's unfortunately, it was abandoned, and this is going back into the early 2000s, and someone broke in and tried to burn it down. Mm-hmm. And the woman who owned it at the time, it just started this sordid history with insurance and all sorts of bad things. But the bottom line is it remained vacant for a very long time, and it was in danger of getting the wrecking ball numerous times. I'm happy to say, though, that it was purchased by a woman who said that she was going to, unfortunately, make it into apartments. Mm. But there is at least work being done on it.
Yeah.
But it's a place that I have never been. I can't validate any of the hauntings because I've never been inside of it. Very few people actually got inside of it legally.
Right.
And even less have gotten. There was also an infamous story where they were doing tours through there maybe about 3 or 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that those were not authorized.
Legal. Oh, no.
It was basically a caretaker who was kind of just trying to make some money on the side.
Oh, man.
It's really bizarre because if you're driving down Franklin Boulevard in Cleveland and all of a sudden you look, it's like out of nowhere somebody plopped this gigantic haunted house in the middle, along it. It's a very foreboding, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It looks like it should be haunted.
Yeah.
And one really cool thing is sadly, I was talking to the woman who owned it right before it caught fire. She had just bought it. She only owned it for a few months before the fire, and I had written to her. This is back in the early 2000s, and she was going to allow me to go up and go through it. She wasn't living there at the time. She was fixing it up. And we got so far as I said to her, I am just dying to know, are there really secret passageways? Because for the longest time, whenever the house would go up for sale, people would try to get the house listing just to see how many rooms were listed.
Right.
And when I asked her about that, I said, how many rooms are there? And she goes, well, I think part of the confusion is what would classify itself as a room, because there's a lot of weird little hidey holes and things in there, and that led me to ask her too. So I said, but are there really hidden passageways and hidden rooms in there? And she said, yes, there are. And I said, where are they? And she said, well, if I told you, they wouldn't be hidden anymore. but she did say that they would be when they were doing renovations. I do know that she said that at one point they were working on the carriage house, which was separate from the building, and she said that they were, they were kind of moving things around, and all of a sudden they noticed that there was a pretty decent sized area of the floor that sounded hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, so I think there really might be something underneath there, but we're not quite ready yet to break out the sledgehammers and just start knocking through things. But she did confirm that there were passageways in the house itself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I'm torn. I'm happy to hear that something's being done with the building. I'm sad to hear that it's being broken up into apartments, but that's better than it getting the wrecking ball.
Yeah, they want to avoid Miley Cyrus at any cost.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Kat, but I think in this situation, I think that it was the best because it was so close to being knocked down that I have a weird little hobby I have many weird hobbies, but one of them is I like to collect bricks from haunted buildings.
Yeah.
And Franklin Castle got so close to the wrecking ball that I actually had several people lined up who were going to go out there and get me a brick from there. So it was, if it has to be apartments, at least it's still standing, and hopefully at least they can preserve the outside of it, but yeah, it was so far in arrears and taxes mm-hmm. and things like that it was not, it was sad.
Yeah. And the story behind it with the family reminds me of Lep Castle or Lep Mansion it has that feeling. So for our listeners, if you want to read about the Franklin Castle, please purchase his book, James's book, The Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Which we are getting close to the end. And I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight.
My pleasure.
2 hours just shot right on by.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah. It always does here.
Yeah.
But I want to give you a chance to give out your website where people can get your books and all the good stuff coming up. And then I want you to stay on till after we're off the air, and then we'll thank you properly.
Okay, cool. Yeah, if people want to check out more things about me, they can go to strangeandspookyworld.com, and that will have all the information about my books, all of my sort of upcoming appearances. I will, my latest book, Ohio's Historic Haunts, is coming out in the fall, and I will be traveling across the entire state of Ohio, giving presentations and showing all the evidence and weird things that I got during the writing of the book. And many of the places I'm going to are actually the locations from the book, so you kind of get that double hit there. If you want more information about my organization, the Ghosts of Ohio, you can go check out ghostsofohio.org. And again, that would have all the information about not only me, but my organization and the work that we do.
All right. Jeff?
Yep. No, you can go to my website, which is jeffgould.net, GEOFFGOULD.net. And if you add the /2011PNV.htm, that's my Paranormal View Hub page, where you can look at previous shows. The podcasts are embedded on that page and on the respective report pages. I'm a little behind because I've just got a new computer working. And so I will, as Kat furiously types in the background. And feel free to, our official website is theparanormalview.com. Go to at Facebook, just do a search for The Paranormal View. There we are. Please like us. We're the community Paranormal View, not the magazine. Like us. I try and put in interesting articles I come across during the week. And I am also on Twitter at Real Badger, RealBadger. Please follow me. I love new followers. And Kat will tell you about other stuff on Twitter.
Okay, so you can follow the Paranormal View Radio Show at ParaView Radio on Twitter. You can also follow me at Kat Cloco or my graphic novel series at Jinxed Comic. You can find out more about my projects at jinxedcomic.com. And we also now have a new Patreon, that is patreon.com/theparanormalview.
And next week, we have Richard Southall, who's the author of Haunted Plantations of the South. So until next week, this is Henry Foister,
Jeffrey Gould,
Barbara
Dunn, and Kat Cloco.
And we will see you next week at the same time. Hope everybody has a great weekend. We'll see you then. Good night, everybody. You've been listening to The Paranormal View on the ParaX Radio Network. Join us again next week at the same time for more of The Paranormal View.